Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for April 8, 2015. I'm Elizabeth Nonemaker. Mayor Eric Garcetti today announced a 20-year plan to make Los Angeles more economically and environmentally sustainable. Goals include ramping up the use of solar power, making biking and public transportation more accessible, and raising the minimum wage to $13.25 per hour. Garcetti also called for continued reduction of water use. By 2025, he wants it to drop by 22.5%, and then by 25% in the 10 years after that.
We should be able to point to what we are already doing. Here in LA, we've consumed the same amount of water today as we did 30 years ago or 20 years ago with a million more people. We've shown the ability to do this, so I'm confident that we're already on track today.
The plan also calls for Los Angeles to source local water by relying more heavily on conservation methods like stormwater capture. Some parts of the plan are ambitious yet vague, such as the provision to reduce the city's temperature difference with rural areas by 3 degrees. In light of the severity of California's drought, it remains to be seen whether the plan is aggressive enough. Speaking of the drought, Southern California's Metropolitan Water District will vote next week on a proposal to reduce the water it supplies to local agencies by 15%. The MWD supplies water to more than 24 organizations and cities and serves more than 19 million people. The effect of the cuts will vary between local agencies depending on their conservation efforts. This plan was proposed before Governor Jerry Brown imposed a 25% mandatory restriction on urban water use. The black unemployment rate is 18%, and a third of those who are working make less than $12 an hour. That's why activists are putting pressure on employers to hire more black workers. Megan Coyle reports.
The Los Angeles Black Worker Center gathered at a construction site today to call for one company to start hiring more black workers. Members of the labor group formed a prayer circle at the site of a future apartment building on Grand Avenue. Only 4% of the workers on the Hanover Construction Company's project are black. Ron Hassan of the NAACP says there are plenty of highly qualified African-American workers in Los Angeles.
In a city as diverse as Los Angeles, it's important that each and every one of these construction sites help that diversity move forward and include African-Americans in their labor force. And if these people that are in charge of construction sites do not employ us, then it puts us into a second-class citizen, and we're not about to accept that as citizens of Los Angeles, California.
The Los Angeles Black Worker Center says city officials aren't doing enough to enforce labor agreements intended to increase diversity. Megan Coyle, Annenberg Radio News.
Members of the Black and Jewish Justice Alliance delivered demands today at City Hall and LAPD offices. In the wake of nationwide racial tension with police, the groups are asking for improvements in LA's Skid Row. This comes just months after police shot a homeless man in broad daylight. The group wants 10,000 housing units on Skid Row and termination of the Safe City Initiative, which issues fines for sleeping on the street. Pastor Aryeh Cohen says he wants police to know the line doesn't stop there.
We are here today to say as loudly as possible that police need the trust of the communities in order to be able to actually protect and serve them.
Other demands include expanding the SMART Team initiative, which pairs police officers with mental health experts. In Los Angeles, only 8 officers have such a partner. A lawsuit was filed today in the police shooting of an unarmed black teenager in South LA. Alexia Narcisse has the story.
A 15-year-old unarmed victim shot by an LAPD officer in February announced he is suing the department for $20 million. Lamar Johnson and Jason Huerta were standing in an alley before school when one of their classmates holding a fake toy gun was noticed by 2 undercover officers. The officers began shooting at the group and chased the 2 unarmed boys, shooting Nicholson in the back. According to witnesses, the officers did not warn the young boys or ask them to stand down. The families of the victim hope that the lawsuit against LAPD will lead to better officer training and improved police treatment of minority neighborhoods. Lawyer John Harris echoed their sentiments in a press conference today.
The narrative needs to be changed where officers are properly trained and will not continue to shoot and then ask questions later, as what was done in this case, because they never, ever took the time to find out what these 4 kids were doing in the alley.
LAPD has not commented or spoken on the matter. Alexia Narcisse, Annenberg Radio News.
Former rap mogul Suge Knight was in court again today. He told the judge that he has fired his attorney. Knight asked permission to represent himself for the next few weeks, but Judge Ronald Cohen denied the request. Cohen said Knight has until May 27th to add to his defense team. Knight is accused of running down two men in Compton and killing one of them in January. Tesla Motors unveiled its newest car model today. The electric car company is touting the S70D as nicer and cheaper than previous models in an effort to court mainstream buyers. Giovanni Mujais has the details.
Tesla's latest model, the 70D, adds all-wheel drive, more range, and more power to the popular luxury car brand. Tesla announced today that it will stop selling the old 380-horsepower base Model S in favor of the new 70D, which is equipped with 514 horsepower and adds 32 more miles of range. The improvements will raise the car's sell price about 7% and the monthly leasing price from $796 to $838. With Tesla shares down almost 4% over the last year, the move may be an effort to appeal to luxury drivers, especially in the Northeast, where the all-wheel drive feature is a huge selling point. Tesla CEO Elon Musk says tax credits will bring down the starting price of $75,000 to $67,500. In 2017, the company is expected to release a $35,000 car called the Model 3. Giovanni Mujais, Annenberg Radio News.
Busy day on Wall Street with the S&P 500, Dow Jones, and NASDAQ all trading up. The biggest story was oil giant Royal Dutch Shell buying its rival BG Group. It's the third largest oil merger of all time, and it will allow Shell to expand its operations in Brazil, East Africa, and the Middle East. Shareholders of Shell weren't so bullish on the move, with the company falling 2 points on the day.
Sports Minute
with Max Holm.
Filling in for Max Holm, I'm Russell Simon. Only 2 days after losing by 28 to the Clippers, the Lakers fell again in the rematch last night, losing 105 to 100. The Lakers have now lost 7 in a row to the Clippers, and head coach Byron Scott was not happy after the loss. Scott lashed out at his team, saying he wouldn't want to be in a foxhole with many of his players because they would end up shooting him in the back. The Clippers improved to 53-26 with the win, and are currently the fifth seed in the Western Conference, with only 3 games remaining. In baseball, the Dodgers had their first rain delay in 7 years yesterday at Dodger Stadium and lost to the Padres 7-3. The Angels beat the Mariners 2-0 behind 8 scoreless innings from C.J. Wilson. In hockey, the Kings' playoff hopes took a big hit yesterday when they lost to the Oilers 4-2. If the Kings lose on Thursday to Calgary, they will officially be eliminated from playoff contention. Finally, the USC football spring game is this Saturday at the Coliseum. Head coach Steve Sarkisian said that the team will not scrimmage during the game as most of their new players from the 2015 recruiting class will not arrive on campus until the summer. For the Sports Minute, I'm Russell Simon, ARN.
If you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Caitlin Plummer with today's Root Source.
The geek character has become a staple in TV shows over the past few decades, from Steve Urkel,
did I do that?
To Screech Powers,
I'm just a geek with a squeaky voice,
to Stuart Minkus.
I think I may have inadvertently discovered the secret of time travel.
There's even a show dedicated to the stereotype.
Bazinga!
But the word geek did not always indicate the intelligence that it does now. It's suspected to be derived from the centuries-old word geek, which means a simpleton or someone who is easily deceived. In the late 1800s, the word geek first appeared in a Northern England glossary of words with the definition a person uncultivated. A few decades later, the word traveled to America and took on the meaning of an outrageous circus performer. Over the next 50 years, it lost its original significance and expanded to being merely an insult. It's around this time that people started describing overeager students as geeks. With the appearance of computers in the 1980s, geek became the label of the class of emerging tech wizards. And now, when your laptop breaks, you can always call on the Geek Squad.
And now, a throwback to The Wire.
Guys who do that,
The Blairs, the Glasses, the Kellys, they always start with something small. You know, just a little quote that they clean up. And then it's a whole anecdote. And pretty soon they're seeing some amazing shit. They're the lucky ones.
The fifth season of The Wire focused on the role of reporters and editors at a Baltimore newspaper. It's just one of the many portrayals of journalists in popular culture. USC journalism professor Joe Saltzman has spent years cataloging how journalists are depicted in movies, TV, books, and elsewhere. His research project, The Image of Journalists in Popular Culture, is a program of the Norman Lear Center. Saltzman has co-authored a new book called Heroes and Scoundrels. One of his students, Tina Gutierrez, discussed with him the concept behind the book.
What we tried to do with The Image of the Journalist in Popular Culture is to integrate that field of academic study into journalism studies, which includes chapters on history, professionalism, diversity, image, war. We brought in all of the films and television shows, novels, video games, commercials, anything involving popular culture, and the image of the journalist in those areas of popular culture into those chapter headings.
I saw that y'all also draw from comics, like you said, and novels. And so is that one way, and are there other ways that that differs from your past books?
Right. Most everything written about the image of the journalist in popular culture has been the image of the journalist in film. Lots of books. I've written one. My co-author, Matthew Ehrlich, wrote one. But the fact is, the image of journalists in television, for example, is much more influential because people watch television day in and day out. And when you have a TV series featuring a journalist, that image is there every week. And I think it's much more influential. So this is the first book that's ever been written on the image of the journalist in popular culture other than film, television, novels, fiction, plays, movies, Broadway musicals, comic books, comic strips, video games, all the aspects of popular culture we cover in this one book.
How are you perceived as a journalist, and does that have any influence on your work now about perceptions of journalists?
I have no idea how I am perceived as a journalist. But I do know that many journalists became journalists because of the images of the journalist they saw in the movies and on television and whatnot. I became a journalist because I loved Clark Kent and the Daily Planet and Perry White and Lois Lane. I figured what an exciting, wonderful life that would be, even without Superman. And a lot of female journalists I know became journalists because of the image of Lois Lane in the Superman comics and the image of Brenda Starr in the comic books and film and television and whatnot. So these images of the journalists have been very powerful images for people who became journalists in real life.
And so far in your findings, was there anything surprising?
One of the things you discover when you investigate the history of the image of the journalist is females do very well. The female journalist is very strong, very good, usually better than the male reporters, constantly fighting to prove herself as good or better than the male journalist. And what's interesting about that is that it's one of the few professions where females really could hold their own. But ironically, in the last 5 minutes of the film or the last few minutes of the novel, few pages of the novel, the woman reverts back to the image that is expected of the woman in the 20th century, that of wanting to be a wife and a mother.
This is a hypothetical question. Right, what if all of the portrayals in all of those types of different books or Broadway shows or films were bad? What kind of effect would that have on society and the profession?
The public doesn't really know journalists. They never visit newsrooms. They don't go to a newspaper office or a broadcast studio or whatnot. The only way they really know anything about journalists is what they see in the movies, watch on television, read in novels. And so that image is extremely powerful because it conditions the way they feel about the people that bring them the news. And if it's negative, it's going to have a negative effect on democracy, on our country. Because if you don't trust the people that give you information, how do you make an informative decision?
And what is something you want your reader to take away by reading the book?
Well, I think anybody reading Heroes and Scoundrels will have a better idea of how images are constructed, what images there are of the journalist, how people of color are treated in the media and fiction, how females are treated, how all kinds of journalists, gay journalists, are treated, and how those images affect and influence us.
That was Joe Saltzman. That's it for this Wednesday. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Elizabeth Nonemaker.